Blog Talk Radio.
John, can you tell me what movie that was from? You have to know.
Oh, see, that's not fair because I was re-going over the list I put together for this, so I wasn't really paying 100% attention. I heard most of it, but
the sheer chaos of it should tell you what it was.
I mean, I'd guess Avengers Endgame, but I didn't recognize any of that from that.
No, it is a movie that is very high on most people's best movies of the decade list. That is Mad Max Fury Road, my friend. That's Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, right.
Witness.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have guessed that. I was in a very 2019 headspace, so.
Well, we are going to be talking about our best of 2019, and maybe your worst if you got any on there. Welcome, everybody. This is Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson. That is John Nolan. We are the Punch Drunk Critics. And this episode, we're going to be talking about our best and worst of the year. We're going to go over some of our top movies of the decade. You know, I just completed my top 100 of the decade, John.
Hats off to you for doing that, because one of the things I suck at the most is when people ask me, what's your favorite movie? Because, I mean, there's five ways to categorize that, but also I always go blank, and I could not do that. I don't know how you did, but hats off to you.
it took me weeks. That's how I did it. It was not easy. I mentioned it before that I did it a decade ago in 2009, not long after we had started the site. I did the top 100 movies of the decade. It was so much easier back then. So easy. I mean, not like it was easy, but it was easier. You know, I hadn't seen
as many movies back then.
Right. I hadn't seen as many movies at the time. So that made it easier. This time I was picking out from 200 to 300 movies each year. And it was just like, how am I supposed to whittle this down to 100? Like, it took me 2 days. And I was at 102. And it took me like 2 days to pick out the two that I wanted to take out.
Well, and that's the other difference. It's not just dedication. It's integrity. Like, you really want those 100 to be your top 100. It has to make the list properly. Yeah. Most people would be like, oh, fuck it. It doesn't matter. But it does
you
matter.
Know what?
And it sucks to report.
After a certain point, when you get deep into the list, you're kind of like, does it really matter what's number 21 and what's number 20? Does it really matter? You start thinking that way, and then you're like, I'll just do it and do it right.
Yeah.
But after a while, when you've been doing, like, especially like, because I broke it into five parts. But after I had done like the first couple parts, it's like, does it really matter? And I was like, I'll just the way I should do it.
You know, you can be real dedicated in the 195, real dedicated in 1 to 5. But when you get to like 37, you know, that's where the real dedication pops up.
Yeah, and of course, I still got the messages from people like, this list sucks. Where was this movie? And I'm like, it's top 100 of a decade, yo. Do you think everything is going to make it in there? Like, no, The Social Network is not in my top 100 movies. I know it's in most people's, but I don't like that movie that much. I mean, it's fine.
I mean, well, that's it's also not the definitive list that everybody needs to cling to. It's your list, so. But that's the internet for you.
Right, and bests really just mean what's your favorite movie. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
You know, I could find a justification for any movie that I like, even if it's a like a movie that most people think is crap. I can find a justification for liking it.
That's an important distinction, though, and that's what I always wrestle with, is when people ask me, because they'll say best, but do they actually mean my, like, my favorite movie or the movie I think is the best piece of cinema? You know what I mean? Like, I've always said on our shows, Bloodsport's in my top list, but, you know, that's obviously not a good piece of cinema.
Right, it's not. And Bloodsport is like, it would be high on my list of best action movies ever made. Is it a great film by any means? No, probably not.
No, yeah.
I mean, even when I was young, I recognized that Bloodsport wasn't a great movie, because because back in VHS days, I had my version, had one version of the movie that had all of the bullshit with, like, Forrest Whitaker, like, cut out of it. It was just the fights. It was just the Kumite stuff. That was literally all it was. But literally everything else was cut out. And then I had the full version. And which one did I watch the most? I watched the one that was just the Kumite version.
That's all that really matters. I mean, the rest of it is just time to take a piss and go get some popcorn, you know?
The rest of it is pretty terrible. I mean, honestly, the rest is pretty terrible. The acting is atrocious. You know, it's just like, I mean,
my favorite line ever in the history of movies is, okay, USA.
I know, right? Oh, man, I still love that movie. I need to watch it again soon. I need to find a version that's just all Kumite stuff, though. I bet if I looked on YouTube, there probably is a version like that.
Oh, there has to be, yeah. I mean, somebody probably put together a super cut of all the best, like, fighting tournament movies and just loop them in there.
Yeah,
God, I'd die happy.
That'd be nice. That'd be real nice. I hope you put your best action movie of the year on here, too, because
I'm going to be honest, my list,
I
was disappointed in my list. I don't know how yours turned out. You know, some years you have a lot of, like, under the radar. I always get pride from finding under the radar movies, or not the movies everybody's talking about, but I went through all the movies that came out this year, like, not even, you know, just the top earners, but all the movies that came out this year, so I didn't forget anything, three times, and my list still is pretty damn predictable, but that doesn't matter because it's my list.
Exactly. I got an email from somebody about a week ago, somebody who's been from up in Canada who's been following us for a while and apparently really likes the most overlooked movies list that I put out every year, and they're asking, the person, I think it's a guy. I think it's him and his wife that both like that stuff every year. And he asked me if I was going to do that list this year, or if the top 100 had, like, was going to, like, take me away from all that stuff. And I was like, I honestly wasn't thinking about it that much, because I had been so you know, sidetracked by the top 100 that I hadn't given much thought to anything else. But now I feel like I should. Now I feel like I should do it. Even though we're kind of,
it's like research for people. I mean, I remember, you know, before we were writing and being in the mix, that used to be my favorite type of thing, because, you know, everybody knows that Avengers was out and Star Wars is out, but there's really nothing better, and I think a lot of people can agree with this, there's really nothing better than putting in a movie you have no expectations for and being blown away, or you didn't know about or anything like that. It's just the best.
And I feel like it's going to be a little bit tougher this year, too, because I didn't see nearly as many movies this year as I did in other years, because you know, we had more people writing on the site, and I could give that stuff over. So I didn't see nearly as many. I think I saw maybe 170 movies this year. That's about 100 less than I would see in most years. It'll be more difficult for me to come up with some of those hidden gems this year, but I'm sure I'll find it. Maybe I'll just do like 10 this year. And probably should be able to do it off just fine. I might try to do
that. Yeah, I mean, even a top five would be good.
Yeah, I might try to do that tonight, actually. And then maybe do my top 20 of the year as well. I'll try to get both of them knocked out in the next couple of days. It's a pretty light month, other than the fact that I'll be gone most of it. But in terms of, like, screening stuff, it's pretty light. I mean, a couple movies this week, like a next week, Like a Boss and Underwater are the two that come out next week. And then this week, mm-hmm. the only movie that was new was The Grudge, which they didn't even bother to screen for us. Which
no.
Tell you something.
Did you see it?
I did see it. I paid to see it on Thursday night. Did you see it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's obvious why they didn't screen it. I mean, just...
Yeah.
I'll be honest. The 2000s were a really weird time for horror movies, because usually you can look back at decades, and every decade has a theme for their horror movies. You know, 80s was slashers, 70s was gritty, so on and so forth. And in the 2000s, the theme changed like four times, and it opened up the decade with J-horror, with The Ring came out and kicked that off, and then went to torture yep. porn and so on and so forth. But those movies were, you know, really scary in the first time around. But this new one, it doesn't do anything new enough, and it's still creepy. They maintain the same visuals, but it's one of these cases where why did you do this? What was the reason for this?
Yeah. I'm kind of with you. The J horrors have never really worked for me, because the J horrors all rely on a gimmick, which is not
yeah.
surprising, because a lot of Japanese stuff in culture relies on gimmicks. I can mm-hmm. say that even when I watch the difference between like professional wrestling and I look at Japanese wrestlers, a lot of it relies on gimmick, which is cool.
Yeah,
I'm fine with it. But for horror, it doesn't really work. And in the case of The Grudge, I think it's particularly egregious. Because they're mm-hmm. all about, you know, the house that has the curse on it. If somebody dies within the house in a particular rage, an act of rage, then it leaves behind this curse, this grudge. Anybody who walks in there is cursed forever mm-hmm. by it. So you can see how it's something that's easily turned into a franchise, because anybody who passes through that joint carries it along with them forever. You know, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
And this one, you know, it's coming out all these years later, because I think the last Grudge movie was maybe a decade ago. I think it was straight to DVD. But it did really well on DVD. Straight to DVD did really well. The three Grudge movies all did pretty well.
Right.
But like I said, the third one was straight to DVD, so the franchise was pretty much falling off at that point still.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring this one back with Nicholas Pesca directing it, who's a director that I really like. He did The Eyes of My Mother, which was creepy as hell. And he did Piercing, which came out, I think, in 2018. And it's just this savage, dark comedy. And it's violent and weird. And to me, it's just a hell of a lot of fun. It's kind of like a revenge movie, kind of flips the tables on that. I like that stuff. And then he comes and he does. He's a really, like I said, really talented filmmaker. Not designed for this kind of studio horror, I don't think,
mm-hmm.
Because he seems like he's going through the motions in this entire movie. Like there's nothing, literally nothing in it that advances the franchise or makes this seem like something that needs to be revived. Like absolutely nothing. It's just straight by the numbers. Haunted house movie, and I was just like, I don't know. And in the theater I was at, the screening we went to, I mean, people were just laughing at it rather than being scared. It was
that's okay depending on what kind of horror movie it is. But if it's not going for that or accepting that, no chance. And that's what I mean. This is a very good example of a licensed keep movie. Like, you know, in any case, anybody out there doesn't know, the studios have to, generally speaking, use whatever property. So if I buy the rights to The Grudge and I don't make a movie in 10 years, I lose the rights. So that's why you see some of these things came out. The most famous one was the Fantastic Four movie by Roger Corman in the early 90s, where the studios will just make a cheap cash grab movie to keep the rights. But, I mean, it's literally no time was spent on doing anything new. Or anything different. It's like, you know, yeah, the kids are still creepy looking, and if they creep you out, and I am one of those people that get super creeped out by the J-horror stuff, but it'll work in that sense, but that's about it.
Yeah. And it's a shame, because it really does have a lot of talented people in it, you know? It's like John
yeah.
Cho, Andrea Riseborough, and Betty Gilpin, and Lynn Shea, and Jackie Weaver. Really great. Damien Bashir's got a couple of Oscar nominees in there.
Yeah.
Really
and Betty Gilpin.
Cast. I am a fan of Betty Gilpin.
you watch Glow, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, I watch Glow. Yeah. And I'm still upset that The Hunt didn't come out because of all the politics that got run the last year. But
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was back in September. I'm certain that movie would have come out sometime in 2020 though. That somebody will find a way to get that movie out. But yeah, so much talent involved in this movie for it to just be as bland as it was. It's pretty unforgivable in my opinion. I mean, it didn't even do well at the box office this week. It opened with $11 million, which horrors
against nothing new, by the way.
Against nothing new. Star Wars won again. And then Jumanji was number one. So yeah, it went against nothing new. It was the only new film in theaters. And it didn't do anything. Because people didn't understand why there needed to be a new Grudge movie. What was the value in it? What was the point?
Yeah.
This is the time when horror movies own the box office. Usually the first week of the box office, the first week of the new year, is owned by some low-budget horror. Last year it was Escape Room.
Yep.
Last year was Escape
Room. And that was not a good movie. So that shows you what it takes.
I actually like Escape Room. But it made $150 million. You know? I mean, that movie extremely well. Most horrors this time of year do, but The Grudge can't. And what's interesting about that is that most of those horror movies aren't revivals of old franchises either. They're usually new things, original concepts with a low budget. And they try to bring back this one with a name brand, and it tanks. One of that sort of message in there somewhere.
Yeah. Whether it's a message anybody will receive, I don't know, but, you know. January, the time of cheap horror and action movies, and there's always, by rule, if you look back, you know, the good news is we have one to come because there's always one. Sometimes two, but it's always one movie that breaks out that comes out in January. Like, I think the first John Wick, for instance, came out in January. Like, that movies like that, you're not expecting. There's always one in the January-February timeline that kicks through, but it wasn't The Grudge.
Boss and Underwater. Underwater looks interesting. That's the one with Kristen Stewart. Thriller. And then Like a Boss does have Rose Byrne and Tiffany Haddish and Selma Hayek in it, so it could potentially be funny. But I don't know if either one of those will be a breakout either. This is an interesting one. There's not a whole lot I'm looking forward to this month, which I'm glad I'm going to send it to see hopefully good films.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Salma Hayek, which is usually a good sign, but she actually shows up on my list here. But I've put together a list for a bunch of different categories. She's on my worst list this year, but damn, she looks good for 55 or whatever she is.
She's gorgeous. She's so gorgeous. She's going to be gorgeous late into life. She's going to be gorgeous. She's going to be one of those.
Absolutely.
Would you still, even though she's 70?
Yeah. That's like Sharon Stone, who's apparently on that app Bumble. I mean, she's loony as a Looney Tune, but she still looks damn good, and she's like 60-something.
Wow, if I find her on Bumble, she comes in the town.
Right.
Let's all right, we talked about The Grudge, and I don't think that movie is going to be talked about.
No.
Let's talk about some of our best movies of 2019. I don't know how many you did. I mean, I kind of did mine concurrent with my top 100. So I kind of
right. I just did 10.
You did 10. Okay, that's cool. So let's go through your 10. Starting, I don't know if you have them in any particular order. It doesn't really matter. But let's go through your 10, and we'll talk about each one a little bit. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time doing this. I do want to talk a little bit about the Mandalorian finale with you.
Yeah, for sure.
And some other stuff that's going on. But let's kind of go through what our top 10s of 2019 were, and you can get us started.
Yeah. At 10, this is we'll start with 10 being the least of the top. I got Shazam, a movie that I was, you know, we saw the trailers, and I was hopeful for, but you never know how it's going to turn out. Obviously, DC, other than Wonder Woman, has had a rough time, especially in the fun movie department. And out comes Shazam with somebody I've always really liked, Zachary Levy. Knocked it out of the park. The chemistry was great, and it was just a shitload of fun. I've watched it a few times since then, and it holds up. So that's number 10 on my list.
Yeah, Shazam's a lot of fun. I like that movie too. I'm curious to see what it goes next, especially with them trying to bring in Black Adam and Dwayne Johnson and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You want to go again? You want me to go?
That's up to you. I'll go down my 10 if you want, or we can go tip for tat. Doesn't matter.
Let's go down your 10.
All right. And then at number 9, I had Ready or Not. Another one that was really surprising me. Samara Weaving, somebody that I've been a big fan of. Just an October horror movie.
Why are you such a big fan of Samara Weaving?
I agree with her philosophies and her politics mostly. Yeah.
You like her for the articles.
But yeah, specifically her philosophy on being super hot. But no, she's actually now.
Margot Robbie.
I'm not gonna disagree with that. But she's got a thick Australian accent, which is kind of puts her over the edge. But I know I come off as a misogynist a lot, but to me, being a good actress is attractive. So that's why I talk about that.
The accent is so sexy, though.
Yes, it is. It is.
Did I tell you when I ran into Zoe Kazan? I mean, not Zoe Kazan, but Zoe Bell.
No.
The night I met Tarantino for the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood party out in L.A. I also ran into Zoe Bell. Like right after I talked to him and got a picture with him, I turned around and Zoe Bell was right in front of my face. And
all right, so describe your reaction. Like, breath stop, what happened?
I had never looked so dorky in my life, and that's straight up true. I mean, straight up.
Yeah, she's...
I was already blown away because I had just met Tarantino unexpectedly and talked to him and, got a cool picture with him. So I was already blown away by that. And then I turned around, and so it was Zoe Bell and the little girl from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They were together. And
okay.
Turned around and Zoe Bell was right in front of my face, and I was like, and I said, "Oh shit, you're Zoe Bell," as if she didn't know she was fucking Zoe Bell. And I was like, "Oh, you're Zoe Bell," and I was like, "I love you." I was like, "I think you're fantastic." And I was like, and she's like, "Oh, thank you," with her accent. I was like, "I'm just gonna turn around and walk now," because
this is not gonna go better, so I'm gonna turn around and walk.
But I literally said it out loud though, like I'm gonna walk away now, and that's what I mean. And I did that. I turned around and I walked away.
That's great.
I've never reacted like that before. And I was just like, ugh. Yeah. Afterwards, I felt like an idiot because I didn't get a picture with her at least. But also that I made myself look so bad. I was like, ugh.
Hey, look, man. I would usually get on you about this, but you glanced over it a bit, but. Think about that 1-2 punch. You meet Tarantino, you take a picture with Tarantino, and you turn around out of nowhere, catching by surprise, this actress that you've always been a huge fan. I can understand that.
But you know what else was awesome about that night, and also kind of frustrating? We also met Burt Young from the Rocky movies.
Right.
Paul, which is awesome. The guy from the guy who played Lil Pan in Big Trouble in Little China, he was there too.
He was in so many things.
Yeah, I think
what was his name?
James Hahn.
James Hahn, yep.
Right, we saw him there. He was the first person we saw when we walked into the bar. It was him. We were like, oh, shit. Jamie Foxx passed him, didn't get a chance to get a picture. But also Emile Hirsch and Cliff Curtis, not Cliff Curtis, but Clifton Collins were there. And we're just like...
Love Clifton Collins.
Yeah. They were all right there in Tarantino, and we didn't get their pictures either because we were just kind of in the clouds after we talked to Tarantino.
Right.
You
kind of want to climb up the mountain, but you guys are like dropped on top of the mountain first, so it's hard to remember all that.
Right, and I was like,
James Hahn would have been a great one.
We should have stayed, man. We could have got pictures of all of them, and we didn't. Apparently, we had just missed DiCaprio too, and it's just like, ugh. So, yeah, that was a wild night. But anyway, from talking about Australian accents.
Exactly, and that's where we go with this. number, what am I on? Eight. Yep. Number eight was The Dead Don't Die. And I know a lot of people didn't like this movie as much. And I'll be honest, it wouldn't have been my top 10 on the first viewing. It's the Jim Jarmusch movie with Bill Murray and Adam Driver. Kind of a, I mean, obviously it's a black comedy, but it's just very odd and very awkward and very strange. And when I watched it the second time, there's been movies, like different movies in my life that I watched the first time and I just don't like them that much. And then on the second viewing, something clicks or something happens and it just really comes together for me. And The Dead Don't Die was one of those. It's just everything came together so nicely on that second viewing that, you know, I've watched it twice since then again. Just a really fun, different take on the zombie genre with a cast that you really can't imagine ever being together. And anything you can get Bill Murray, like today, Bill Murray. Yeah. Today, Bill Murray being his full self in the lead role, then, you know, it's going to be something great.
Yeah. And Adam Driver, another one of his roles this year, he had was just an amazing year. He had a career year, Adam Driver.
Oh no. Yeah. He has literally hit three of like, maybe there's like four or five types of movies in Hollywood. He's hit like three of the five. He hit the awards movie with Marriage Story. He hit the blockbuster action movie with Star Wars, and he's got the funny, I would say low income, that's not right, low budget horror/comedy movie. He's just really,
and
there's not much else he could have done.
And he had The Report, which you might get
and The Report, yeah.
For that too. So,
yeah, the only thing he could have done to make this year more for him is record a Grammy-winning single and star in a play that gets Tonys, but maybe next year. Next up is John Wick 3, Parabellum. This series is just keeps up at a level that I think everybody was surprised by in the first one, and then it just keeps bringing more, and it does so in a way that it takes, you know, a lot of times when they say movies don't take themselves seriously as a good thing, it means that the movie doesn't feel real, like true to the genre it's in. But this is a movie that doesn't take itself seriously in a way that it's still a hardcore action movie that this is essential popcorn entertainment. You sit down, 90 minutes, Keanu Reeves kicks ass. It doesn't get any better than that when it comes to popcorn action movies to watch. Then I have Jojo Rabbit. I don't think you can really describe this movie without being interested. Taika Waititi as Adolf Hitler in a movie that follows a Nazi youth during the war. And it's just Scarlett Johansson, you know, I know Marriage Story is what people are going to talk about her for, but she was amazing in this and really heartbreaking, you know, but I don't want to go into that too much. But the mixture of the performances by her, Sam Rockwell, and the young boy whose name is escaping me at the moment, really were at the very top of my list for performances this year. Rockwell especially, I think he should be getting an Oscar every year, even if he doesn't star in a movie, just because he's always amazing. I mean, the story is just such a unique take, and even though it's clouded in comedy, and there's, you know, there's darkness to the movie, obviously it's about Nazi Germany, but even though it's clouded in comedy, there's a really, really good message and story in there about, you know, believe in the hype or listening to what everybody else is saying and judging for yourself and, you know, seeing through, you know, the clouds and fog around you that the world can give you sometimes. So it was really a movie that surpassed my expectations. And then I got Knives Out. I was not surprised at all how much I love this movie. You know, we've talked 100 times on our various shows about Rian Johnson, the movie Brick, and just what an amazing filmmaker this guy is when he's not doing Star Wars. He's just amazing. He comes out. You got Ana de Armas, one of my new top five favorites. You got Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Why do you like Ana de Armas so much?
Because she was on the honor roll all 4 years in high school. And I respect that, Travis. I respect the hard work. Rian Johnson just proved
she
that he's
a
still,
very good
he's still,
actress, as well as being incredibly, incredibly hot. She's also
yeah. Those things aren't mutually exclusive.
As well,
right?
Go ahead. Go on.
It's just it. The only thing that surprised me about Knives Out was that Rian Johnson kept that excuse the pun, but edge of the knife sharp writing that usually kind of drops off a little bit when you leave the indie realm. You know, people are always affected by the studio process. I mean, Rian Johnson just came off of Star Wars, you know, The Last Jedi. So to be able to come back and write something this indie feeling, this sharp, and this together after that and not be tainted by the process is all even more impressive. The whole thing together was just...
Let's be honest, he was able to write this movie probably because of that experience. I mean, he puts a lot of commentary about exactly the kind of people who attacked him because of The Last Jedi into this movie. So
yeah, that's true.
I think if he had never done The Last Jedi, Knives Out probably would still exist, but it might exist in a different way. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, then in that case, I'm glad for that whole process because it shows me that Rian Johnson is you know, I was one of those people that didn't like Last Jedi. I've always said it 100 times, and I, you know, it just reaffirmed that why I love the guy, why I've always enjoyed his movies. Brothers Bloom, Brick, Knives Out, you know, they would be in my those three would probably make my top 100 of the last 20 years, all three of them. So next up,
I saw you put on a lot of best of the decade lists. I saw Looper on a lot of best of the decade lists too. So.
Yeah. When Looper's, I forgot about it. See, that's one of the reasons that I would never have the dedication you did to write a top 100 of the decade. But that's why I'd be really interested in doing it, is rediscovering all these movies I forgot about.
Exactly the best part of it. That is exactly the best part of it.
Right. You know what? I think I actually have a top 11. So we're just gonna have to have that. Because next up is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Only thing I could possibly say wrong about that movie was it was a little overlong. And it's Tarantino, so that kind of comes with the territory. You know, Brad Pitt, I mean, everybody knows the cast. I don't need to go over that. But I really like that. There was another movie came out this year that should be on a lot of worst lists called The Haunting of Sharon Tate. Now, the Manson murders are one of the biggest culturally significant crimes of the last 100 years. It literally killed the theme of a generation, you know, this killed the summer of love, killed the hippie movement. You know, people started locking their doors. That whole 1950s and 60s, you know, rose colored past that people talk about, this is where it stopped. This is one of the things that stopped it. And, you know, it's something that, you know, Tarantino doesn't, I don't want to say he treats things disrespectfully, but he treats them as how he wants to treat them. In the Tarantino way. We saw what in Inglourious Basterds and all that. So this could have gone wrong, but it really felt like he treated the original source with respect and showed us exactly what we wish would have happened. There's also a really cool note in it about the very, you know, the butterfly effect type thing that happens in life. Like something as simple as you know, being home at the wrong time or going to the wrong door could completely change not just that event, but the entire history past it. You know, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Sharon Tate survives this. And, you know, it's really hammered home by her coming out and talking to Leonardo DiCaprio at the end of it. And you know, it's like, wow, this one thing changed. What's that?
I said, well, I ain't spoiled that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been out. People, you know, there's a moratorium on that shit.
So
not to mention, anytime you have.
What number are you on now?
I'm on 4. Yeah, okay, I'll go quick. Leonardo DiCaprio burning, flame throwing somebody in the pool gets it on the list. Next up is Rise of Skywalker, obviously. Into the Spider-Verse. No, that's on my last year list. Sorry. Rise of Skywalker and then Avengers Endgame. And I don't really need to go into either one of those too much because we know, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum. So Endgame, Far From Home, but Far From Home and Captain Marvel are just outside of my top 10.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. Yeah, when you said Spider-Man, Spider-Verse, I assumed you meant Spider-Man Far From Home, but okay.
No, I keep all my lists in an Excel spreadsheet just in case I ever need to look back at them, so it all gets kind of muddled sometimes. And if I can, I'll just shoot through I've got two or three movies, and I'll run through them real quick. Most disappointing of the year, Rambo, Last Blood, and Pet Sematary. and worst of the year is Serenity and Drunk Parents.
I'm so upset.
I never watched Serenity.
I'm so upset that I haven't watched that yet.
You haven't?
No, someone else did it for us, I think. I certainly didn't.
I did it. I mean, I know you're a completionist, so I'm surprised you didn't see that afterwards. It's just so bad. Like the premise is bad. The performances are bad. The dialogue, I mean, it's just so bad. And then it's got this twist that you're like, they're not really going to do this twist, are they? And then they do it, and you're just like,
this,
wow.
This was a really year for Matthew McConaughey movies. Besides Serenity, he also did The Beach Bum, which is just so bad. And I love Harmony Korine. Spring Breakers was in my top 100 of the decade. But The Beach Bum is incomprehensible nonsense. And it's just like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm watching. And I watched it late. I watched it, like, in December. I didn't watch it when it came out.
That's why I don't understand hype. Because before that came out, there was hype for it. And then it came out, and it was like, there goes the hype, because it's not good.
There's good reason for it. I was hyped for it big time. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm a big fan of Harmony Korine, and that cast looks like a lot of fun. But, man, that movie's just nonsense. You got more?
No, I just Drunk Parents was the other one. That was what I was alluding to with Salma Hayek. Her and Alec Baldwin in a movie that's just couldn't be more. Give us money and we'll go away. It was bad, real bad.
Oh man! All right, I'm gonna run down my top. I'm gonna run down.
I took up all the time.
Oh no, it's fine. It's fine. We can get through this. No big deal. And these are in no particular order, so I'm not gonna. These aren't in the top 10 or anything. First one is Uncut Gems. Also on my list of my pick for surprisingly had the best acting year of 2019 was, or not really that, but one of the best years of his career was Adam Sandler. Not only was Uncut Gems a phenomenal, I said it's his best performance he's ever given, even better than Punch Drunk Love, but he's actually kind of fun and pretty good in Murder Mystery. Netflix's top movie of the year, most watched movie of the year, Murder Mystery, which is actually really enjoyable. So this is a good year for Adam Sandler. And Uncut Gems is just maddeningly.
And you know what? It would have made my list. If we were doing a best cinema of 2019, it would have made my list. But there's only reason it's farther down on my list is I'm an anxious person. And I damn near had to get a Xanax watching that movie. That's a testament to his performance. But wow.
Absolutely. That movie will give you a heart attack. Safdie Brothers, they make... Between this and Good Time, man, they'll give you a stroke. Parasite, which I just absolutely love that movie. Another movie that is anxiety-inducing. Ad Astra, which I'm sad to say, I feel like people have kind of been overlooking this award season. I think Ad Astra is just a brilliant film.
I think people were expecting Gravity, and that's why I got some bad stuff. And that's not really fair to the movie. It was good.
I would agree with that. And I think Brad Pitt gives one, if not my favorite male performance of the year, it's certainly one. Midsommar, which I think is also the best quote-unquote horror movie. I don't even necessarily want to call it a horror, but I would say it kind of falls in that category. But Midsommar is just fantastic. And I had to see it. It was the second time I saw it when it really clicked for me. Like, I liked it the first time a lot. But the second time I saw it, the uncut version, sitting there in the crowd and watching it, I was just like, yeah, this movie's really working for me. Midsommar, I just love that film. Almost cracked my top 100 of the decade, but then I thought against it. Avengers Endgame, highest grossing movie of the year of all time. You know, this movie's just, this is one of those films, and I kind of, when I was doing my top 100, which it appears in, I kind of categorized it right along with like Captain America, Civil War, and just a movie that is just of a huge comic book spectacle, the way that I would want it to be, like I want comic book movies to be. Does it all make sense? Absolutely not. No. But is it? But then again, most comics don't make sense either. They just give you the fun. They give you the superheroics, and that's what this movie does.
Right.
So, I mean. That's
and you know what? Just one note about Endgame before we stop talking about it until the best movies of the last 100 years. The ability of them to take so many storylines, so many characters, so many things, and land it near perfectly is you know, it should get an Oscar just based on that. I mean, merging things together and giving them the right you know. In respect to everything is really hard to do, and I was really surprised by that.
Proof. Avengers Endgame is proof that you can take a multi-year storyline and you can stick the landing. For people like me who feel that The Rise of Skywalker does not stick the landing, and a lot of people make excuses, well, it was never going to be able to be satisfying. I think that's bullcrap. You could have made a satisfying movie. Avengers Endgame proves that you can. That's 10 years and many more movies of storylines than Star Wars had. like more than double the number of movies.
Yeah, I can't even defend it on that, yeah.
Right, I mean, so it's like, it can be done. To me, it just wasn't done with Star Wars, but Endgame proves that you can do it. It is possible to do that sort of thing and stick the landing and satisfy people, because people were satisfied by Avengers Endgame. Even those who don't think it's amazing, like I do and others do, feel that it was satisfying. Obviously, otherwise it wouldn't have made so much money. Next movie, 1917, which, full disclosure, is my number one movie of 2019. 1917 was just a... In terms of war movies, I don't know if there's ever been one that puts you right there in the thick of it the way that movie does. And a lot of it is the way it's shot, for sure. There's a big part of it. But it's just such a brilliantly made film. I love everything about it. So 1917 for me.
You know, I don't want to call it a gimmick, because it's not. The way it's shot is one.
Sometimes
it's edited with like one take.
There are movies where it is a gimmick. But the other times it is used to enhance the story. It's used. It's there for a reason. It's one of those cases where
you really feel like you're on the trip, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I like that it didn't focus on the large trench war. It avoided the impulse to focus on large trench warfare. You know, most of the things that happened were small personal moments of combat or whatever you want to call it. And I think that's where it really set it apart.
Yep. Next up is Ford versus Ferrari. Rare art house film that also works as popcorn entertainment. Those movies don't come around that often anymore. The Report, which I saw back in January and absolutely loved. And it's one of those movies that I don't know how many other times I'm going to watch it, because I don't want to watch about the torture report that much. I just think it's the movie that proves that you can also make these kinds of informative bio dramas that on the surface seem like they'd be very dull and very dry, and you can do them intense and worth connecting with. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I love everything about Tarantino and the movies he makes right now, and this movie more than any other that he's ever made is like pure Tarantino. It just throws you into his mindset, his view of Hollywood more than anything any other movies ever. The last one for me is The Farewell, which I also saw in January, and I knew it was going to be very high on my list of best movies of the year, and it stayed there. Awkwafina, I hope she gets nominated for an Oscar this year. It's one of those movies that it's culturally specific, but the themes are universal. Talk about family and loyalty and trust and all sorts of things. And I just think it's just amazing. So those are my 10 for 2019. A couple extra things here. Best sci-fi film for me was Alita: Battle Angel. That would probably be my most underrated too, if I thought about it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's really not. Even from when it came out, it never got the hype it deserved, and I feel like people thought it wasn't talked about, so they assumed it was bad, but they would be wrong.
Yeah. Now you got a lot of people campaigning for it to get a sequel. Most Surprising Actor 2019, that was Adam Sandler. Best Horror, Midsommar. Most Disappointing Film, besides The Rise of Skywalker. I left that out, although I just mentioned it, so you know it was in there. Most Disappointing Film was Triple Threat. Triple Threat, this is the action movie that had Iko Uwe and... Tiger Chen.
Tony Jaa.
And Tony Jaa, which on paper should be the greatest action movie of all time. And it was just, another action movie. That's all it was. It was just another action movie. Which is like, I feel like I could have written a better action movie for those three than they got. It was just a very bland film. It needed a better director. It needed a more dynamic director. That was the problem, more than anything else. It needed a more dynamic director than Jesse V. Johnson, who's just a workman director. Like he's like he's like the kind of guy who will make Kickboxer 4. You know, he's not the guy who's gonna make like The Raid. You know, like that's what it needed. It needed like Gareth Evans to make that movie.
Yeah, and if you look at his filmography as director, he has done absolutely zero movies that you would have ever heard of, really. You know, but and I think that's a classic Hollywood mistake of thinking that as long as you have one good ingredient, the pie's going to taste good. But you know, you have those guys, but you also need the story, you also need the director, and it's a missed opportunity because who knows if you'll ever get those guys together again.
Yeah. So I've talked a lot about my top 100 movies of the decade, but I feel like I don't need to say a lot more about it. Go over to punchdrunkcritics.com and click on features, and you can see my top 100 movies of the decade. I have them broken down into 5 parts. If I want to quickly run down what my, let's say, top 10 of the decade were, they were The Revenant, Rogue One, Short Term 12, Avengers Infinity War, The Florida Project, Brooklyn, The Raid 2, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Roma, and my number one, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Which
was that the last decade?
That was 2010.
Wow. And it was Raid 1 in the last 10? Or do you think Raid 2 is better than Raid 1?
I think the Raid 2 is better than that one. But the Raid the Raid is number 15. So they're both in my 20.
Yeah. I mean, they really are. You don't get a better two-punch of action movies than The Raid and Raid 2.
Yeah. And I wanted to put Keanu Reeves' Man of Tai Chi on my top 100, but it couldn't make it.
Not another good one that people overlooked a lot. What would you? I don't know if you did this list or if you think about it, but the worst couple movies of the last decade. It's so hard to do the worst because you forget about bad movies.
Yeah, I know, and I didn't even really think about them when I was doing it because I was mm-hmm. so intent on finding the best ones that I totally like didn't even think about the worst ones. I didn't have time to think about the worst ones. Space to think about. So I didn't even think about what the worst ones would have been. What would be yours?
I threw a quick list together, and you know, Jack and Jill. You know, we talked about Adam Sandler out today. This was his and I'm a big Adam Sandler guy. Like I understand why people don't like his Netflix movies most of the time or any of the movies he does, but I always think they're fun if nothing else. Jack and Jill was not, and it really tainted the career of Al Pacino. Not really, forget about it. But the worst of the last decade is a movie that I still have no idea. I really wanted to see a movie documentary like a what was the one about that bad movie? Shit, I forgot what the name was. But I want to see a documentary about how this movie got made. Is Movie 43. I mean, it's got to be up there on the list of worst movies ever made in the history of the world. It's got this huge, crazy cast.
THR's it's actually pretty good. Like in terms of like movies I would put in there, they got some low hanging fruit on there. Like the Adam Sandler oeuvre. It's like Jack and Jill, The Cobbler. The Cobbler is atrocious. The Cobbler might be very low on my list of worsts.
Mm-hmm.
Pixels. I actually kind of enjoyed Pixels just in a weird way. And That's My Boy, which is just terrible. And Just Go With It, just awful. Cowboys and Aliens, which a movie I literally forgot existed until like 2 seconds ago.
But that was forgettable. It wasn't necessarily bad. Or maybe, I don't remember because I forgot, but I don't remember it being horrible.
It was pretty bad, too. I mean, that was a Jon Favreau joint, wasn't it?
I think you're right, yeah. I know it's a named director that's associated with it. I'm trying to think of who it was.
I think it was.
Last Airbender is another one that a lot of people would put on that list.
Yeah, that's low-hanging fruit. Just like putting the mm-hmm. the 56 trilogy on there is low-hanging fruit. That's like, yeah, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
This Means War is legitimately terrible. That deserves to be there. Although I'm sure our friend Rocky probably likes it because she thinks Chris Pine's on Mardi Gras. Valentine's Day, which I thought was the last decade, but apparently it was 2010. So
yeah, there was like a three or four year span where we had a bunch of holiday themed movies. It was like this winter, curl up with your family and watch Boxing Day. You know,
they're all. But
did he do all those?
He did a bunch.
Oh,
wow. Didn't he do that when he did New Year's Eve?
I knew he'd done one, but I didn't know if he did multiples. But you know, Gary Marshall's 150 years old. If he wants to make some sappy movies, make some money, he's done right by me.
Gary
at some
Marshall
point.
Is dead. One.
Well,
any movies
when
right
when
now.
He
died,
made it. I mean,
he died in 2016.
Yeah, after him,
yeah. Yeah, he did Valentine's Day. He did New Year's Eve, and he did Mother's Day, back to back to back.
And then he
and
died.
All,
coincidence?
And then he died. That's actually true because he did Mother's Day in 2016, and he died in 2016. So he gave us those.
I'm just glad.
He's like, here you go.
I'm just glad that.
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Live with it. I'm just glad that there were when going through all the movies that came out in the last 10 years, you know, it was a quick look. So there might be some one that I'm not remembering, but I was glad that there weren't a bunch of bad spoof movies. That was the biggest sin of the 2000s. Was there was a period of time, and I don't remember what movie kicked it off. It might have been an overhang from Scary Movie, but there was like a 4-year period where they just made the laziest, stupidest parody movies possible. And, you know, people like Paris Hilton started them, and it was just horrible. And parodies is one of my favorite genres when it's done right.
A Haunted House 2 was 2014, so they were still making them. Still making them this decade.
Well, yeah, the Wayans did, but I kind of let them do what they want to do. I'm talking about, like, disaster movie, action movie,
oh,
you know, all
yeah,
those
yeah.
horrible ones. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right.
All in all, and the one thing that – the one thing you really got to point out about the 2010s, you know, even though it started in 2008, it's really the most obvious thing. But the decade was obviously owned by Marvel, and you know it'll be interesting to see if their effect on cinema is a permanent thing. But it's going to be really hard for people to keep saying that the superhero time is over. You know, they've been saying that for 10 years, and really in the last couple of years you stopped hearing that because I think Marvel finally showed people that. It's not a gimmick movie. It's something that you can actually make good cinema that people enjoy about.
Well, we only got about 7 minutes left here. So, what were some of your picks for best of the decade? Because we didn't get any of those. What are some of your picks for best of the decade?
Oh, here, let me pull up my list real quick.
Come on, man. You're supposed to be ready.
I know. I put my list down because I stopped doing my stuff. Hold on 1 second. let's see. Okay, I had the one we, and this is even worse because we opened the show with it. Is Mad Max Fury Road was on my list. These are I didn't put these in order.
That was my.
Let's see. I had the rare cinematic movie that the rare critically acclaimed movie that I'll put on my list. Beast of Southern Wild is on my list. I really loved that movie. I put the MCU as a whole on the list because otherwise it would just be a top 10. Of you know those movies, The Force Awakens was on that list, and let's see,
where was Solo on that list? Solo was on that list. Where was it?
Solo didn't make the list, but you know what? I still don't agree. The thing about Solo is it's just forgettable.
Like
it's not bad. Yeah, it's not a bad movie. It's just forgettable. Like Rogue One made your list, and I'm sorry. You know what? Rogue One would definitely be on my list. I completely. Overlooked it, but that would definitely be on my list. That movie has become, has gone from being in my top five to probably in my top two, if not top three, of Star Wars movies because it is so utterly rewatchable and so damn good.
It's still,
I love it.
The only Star Wars movie that feels like they're really at war. Like it's the only one that moves that way.
And you feel like you feel like there's real stakes for everybody involved, and you find out that there are real stakes, but. You know, it's something. The Wolf of Wall Street would be on that list for me.
That movie is kind of like the anti Rise of Skywalker because one of my big beasts with the Rise of Skywalker. And I don't want to spend like I don't want to sit here and shit on the movie that I know you like more than I did, but that movie.
Oh, that's good.
Were,
go ahead.
There were ultimately no. I mean, but really, there for a lot of those characters, there weren't a lot of stakes that ended up, you know, being paid by most. Like every time somebody seemed like they were dead, they were brought almost immediately right back. And it's just like,
and you knew that they were going to be.
Right. And it was like, but that Rogue One was like, nah, man, these characters got some shit going on, man. They didn't know, and then come back from this.
Yeah. Well, you know, it didn't bother me, but I can definitely agree with that. Like, you know, Rogue One, you didn't know. You knew that some of the people that showed up later, but they were all cameos. Only people that were going to be in later films showed up in cameos. And in Rise of Skywalker, really, it could have been built and it could have been done in a way that everybody was at risk, except for maybe Rey. You know, she's got to survive at least to the very end. But like Finn and Poe, those two could both be primed for a heroic sacrifice. And I don't know about you, but I never once during the run of the movie thought, oh, well, this is Finn's last moment or this is Poe's last moment. I mean, yeah, it just never felt that way.
Yeah, it never felt that way. You're absolutely right. All right, keep going. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting. And they got only a couple minutes left. I keep interrupting. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, I saw The Devil would probably be on that list for me. Kick-Ass, which is a movie. What's that?
I saw The Devil's on my top 100. I love that movie, too.
Yeah, that's just a great all-around movie. You know, let's see what else I got in here. The Mission Impossible movies I had put on as a group just because I'm so surprised by them, and it's such a backwards way that things go is that with each sequel they seem to get better. Much the way that in a backwards way Tom Cruise seems to be more physical the older he gets.
Yeah.
Dread and The Cabin in the Woods were the two I'll mention just because those are probably the underrated or overlooked when people talk about the best movies of the decade. I think Dread, it's still criminal that there's no sequel or that it didn't get a good box office. Such a good all-around movie. And then Skyfall is on the top 10 of the decade for me, I'd say, for sure. Arguably the best Bond movie, but I still favor Casino Royale. There's something about that movie. Maybe it's because it's his introduction, but there's something so new and so great about that movie.
The only reason I'm not upset about Dread not getting a sequel, and I was upset about it for a long time, the only reason I'm not upset by it is because if it did get a sequel, we probably wouldn't have Ex Machina or Annihilation. So I love both of those films.
Yeah.
Alex Garland wrote Dread and he directed both Ex Machina and Annihilation. He probably wouldn't have had
Right. Okay.
At least one or both of those. So, that's the only
reason. Right.
But I'm with you. I always wanted Dread to get a sequel. And I'm sad that it never will at this point.
Yeah, and then Train to Busan is the only other one I'll mention. I know we're running short on time here. If you want to talk about overlooked movies, if anybody's a fan of the horror genre, specifically the zombie genre, it's a Korean movie about a guy who's just trying to get across country to get to his loved ones on a train, and it's batshit crazy, and it's amazing.
Yeah, great pick. That's a good pick. Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the Mandalorian finale, but we're not really going to have time
You could have shut me up earlier. I forgot about that.
No, it's okay. We can talk about it next week. It's not a big deal. Mandalorian's not going anywhere.
have you watched The Witcher at all?
I haven't. You know what sucks? We have an interview with like the star, the cast of The Mandalorian, of The Witcher from Comic-Con, and I have time to transcribe it.
Oh, shit.
Our friend Karen did it at Comic-Con, and she didn't have time to transcribe it. She writes for
Where are those interns that we that we're supposed to be getting? That's a great intern job.
As soon as we get them, that's going to be their first assignment. It's going to be to do that.
Right.
We need to do that. I'm going to try to watch The Witcher at some point.
It's good. Just I don't know if you played the games or any of that. It's a really good show once you get over the confusion that I'm sure you've heard about.
I've heard about the confusion.
Yeah.
It's
something that could have been fixed very easily with like just a date in the lower left-hand corner for a couple seconds when they switch over. But it's so seamless, and you're like, oh, wait a second, this person, I thought they were dead. They're back, you know, what's going on? But by the fifth episode, you kind of know what's going on, and you really can get into it.
All right, well, we are winding down to the last 30 seconds of the show, everybody. I'm going to thank everyone who tuned in to listen to our Best of 2019 and our little discussion about the best of the decade and our review of The Grudge. You can find out more at punchdrunkcritics.com. I am Travis Hobson. That is John Nolan. You can find us on Twitter at punchycritic and at punchdrunkjohn. Check us out here every single week on Blog Talk Radio and on Spreaker and everywhere that you get podcasts. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks a lot, John. I'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
Later, everybody. Bye.